ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Thursday, the on-ramp to round 9 of the AFL Premiership season. Corbin and Ben with the Richmond champion, Brett Delidio. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the desk from me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. You've come back very early this morning from broadcasting some boxing up in Zoo Castle, as they call it, Newcastle, but the Zoos have made it their own. It did have me thinking last night as I was watching you broadcast the free part of the evening. Which two footballers would I like to see in the ring at the moment?
Oh.
Any ideas, Brett Delidio, as we welcome you in? Which two footballers would you like to see go head to head?
I'd like to see, it'd probably be Tom Papley and Braden Maynard. You know, a bit of a mismatch in terms of height, but just two, they look like hotheads and they'd be ready to go. I'm not sure. Who are you thinking, Benny?
I think Tom Papley is certainly one of them. I just don't know if I can find the right matchup for him.
Yeah. What about, I had a couple put to me today. So, Tuk Miller and Dane Zorko?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's like a proper beef.
They'd be similar sort of weight class too, similar heights and weights.
The other one that's a real sort of oil v. water matchup, which should be interested as a boxing purist that I am, Lids, to be able to see Toby Green, Marcus Bontempelli. The big, long, slick moving Bontempelli up against the mauler in Toby Green. Yeah. Hop all over him. So
maybe Green and Papley. They'd be sort of similar heights and weights. Green a little bit bigger than Tom, but that wouldn't be a bad one.
There we go. That's a good way to start. We're here.
I won't go into boxing too much more because I really don't care that much for it, to be honest.
And you certainly won't go into boxing because that's a pretty face, Lids. You don't want to be putting that in harm's way.
That's right. The nose is crooked enough, Benny. We don't need to make it even more bent.
The reason we're here early on your Thursday on ABC AFL Daily is the fact that there's no Thursday night footy in Melbourne because we have a blockbuster juicy fixture out west. It is the Fremantle Dockers up against the Hawks and some fascinating changes that have taken place in this game. So first of all, from a Fremantle perspective, they make just the one change. Judd McVie comes in for Jeremy Sharp. Three changes for Hawthorn, Ben. So we get to see Bodie Ryan, who was pick 46 in the 2023 draft. He's played nearly 40 VFL games. Sam Butler makes his return. And Max Ramsden, who's played no more than four games in a single season for the last 3 years. He's going to partner both Lloyd Meek and Ned Reeves as part of a three-prong sort of ruck forward attack for Hawthorn.
Yeah, so the second Bodie we've seen at AFL level, but the interest is in Ramsden. So, Lids, the question is here, will Hawthorn really play the three rucks in this game?
Not sure. There must be a watch on one of their tools. There has to be, I think, but Ramson's a really good runner, so whether they see him as someone who can get around the ground with a Luke Jackson or not, I don't know. Maybe that's the challenge for him, but yeah, I find that who are the listed outs? I know there's a watch on John Newcomb, but Scrimshaw's been omitted too. I think I saw. Is that right?
Kel Shadier's out, so he's not going to play in this game. Take out Scrimshaw, take out Finn McGuinness, who didn't have a great night the other day.
No, he didn't. No, which is fine. But I think maybe it is to combat the key backs of Freo. You know, Pearce and Cox together are pretty sound. And McVie for Sharp, I mean, that's just a natural upgrade, in my opinion. I think he's a pretty handy player, Judd McVie. So, yeah, look, interesting. I can't see, I think, being too tall, but then their smalls get to work, don't they? So maybe they're relying on that pressure and up the ground run.
Question marks everywhere. So Sicily, minor ankle injury. Newcomb, soreness, barely trained all week. Both made the trip. And Lloyd Meek's the other one who's there's a bit of a question mark over. So maybe that's where Ramsden comes into the thinking there. The Hawks have won only one of their last seven visits to Perth Stadium. So we'll see what we get from the Hawks tonight. A few other questions out of this game, Ben, which are particularly fascinating.
Yeah, so Justin Longmuir just bristled at the suggestion that this is a game that gives them a chance to prove something, Lids. So do they still need to prove it to you, Fremantle?
No, I don't think so. I think they're legitimate this year. And I speak on a number of different platforms. And I've been on the Dockers, I reckon, since round two or three. And to the point where people are getting sick of hearing it, you know. So I don't need to double down. I think they're actually a legitimate side. that the question mark probably is that Cats game, I reckon, right? And their inability to, they started hot in that game but weren't able to finish it out, you know. So danger game, yeah, because they're up against a fellow top four side, which makes it exciting. But always those games, you can't expect Fremantle to come out and just wallop them by 10 goals because it's on their home deck. It's the gap between, you know, the four best sides, the six best sides is very minimal, you know. And if they don't get it done, I don't think that's baby out with the bathwater.
No, where they actually need to prove it to me is against the lesser sides. So they, Justin Longmuir spoke about this as well. They actually have a better record against the better teams. Yeah. I want to see them when they play the teams in the bottom eight as it is now, or the even the bottom 10. Yeah. Be more ruthless. Win and win easily.
Yeah. That mulligan they had against St Kilda last year where they kicked 7 points or something in the first half, something like that. You know, like they're the games you're talking about, Benny, I think, that, yeah, commit to foot on the throat and absolutely burying those weaker sides.
I've heard this from a lot of Fremantle fans that essentially they want that. They want them to grind, you know, pour opponents into the dirt. Really, all you got to do is tick the box, move on. As long as they bring their best against the best sides in the competition, I think there's nothing wrong with the way that, that they're progressing so far. The other out that I didn't mention was Andrew Lambert, who's not making the trip to Perth after hamstring tendon damage in both his hammies. So all the best to him, the Hawks physio. And talk about the boxing sort of Newcastle crossover connection. Jack Ginnivan arrived at the airport with a 2-litre carton of milk, which Nikita Zhu all week was chugging back milk as well as part of his preparation. I wouldn't have thought there's a strong crossover there, Lids, pre-combat to actually have a lot of milk in your system as a professional athlete. I know a lot of players nowadays have the sort of chalky milk protein shake at the end of the game, but I'm not sure how that would go in the guts pre-match.
Nah, mate, I was always one for minimising the amount of milk that I had pre-game because it'd churn and sit in your guts, but maybe he's onto something, Guinea. He's playing good footy and his body has trimmed down and... He does look a hell of a lot better, more like a professional athlete than he ever did. So we might be onto something. Maybe we need to tune in.
Well, apparently it was water inside the – he was recycling the milk bottle. So apparently it was water in there for the flight, not milk.
Who drinks water out of a milk cup?
Not anyone I know, but Guinea does a lot of things that I don't think anyone else does. I do remember Harry Taylor when he had the navicular injury, which I've had. They told him, drink as much milk as you can to help the calcium with the bones. So it does happen. Brisbane and Carlton. Carlton, it's been another big week for them with them being fined $75,000 for bringing the game into disrepute and the WorkSafe investigation continues there. But the discussion this week is largely centred around Patrick Cripps.
Yes.
Should they consider trading Patrick Cripps, Brett Deledio, and if not him, any of their other players?
Absolutely. I think anyone should be open to. I think they need to fully commit to, you know, restructuring, rebuilding that their list and trying to get up to speed with the modern game, if that makes sense. I think, unfortunately, at the moment, they were very heavy in contested ball winners, finals type players and whatever else, but the rules have changed and their inability now to keep up and be on the spread or use the footy well is, you know, that's a thing of the past. And that's why I think, Paddy Cripps, and it's funny that I heard another radio broadcaster, one of your good mates, Benny, talking about Paddy Cripps and how he would be judged in history, Hall of Famer in my opinion, but what has he done as a team success? And it's like, mate, he cannot win a flag by himself. So take that completely out of the narrative. As a footballer, he has given absolutely everything to that footy club and stuck there through some absolutely stinky times. So let's judge him on what he's done, not what the team's done. That is completely unfair and I will forever back him. And he'll be like, oh, well, you never won one, so you don't know what it is. Well, I don't give a shit. You know, at the end of the day, this is about Patrick Cripps and his ability to play footy, and he's a damn good footballer.
Oh, I'm 100% in behind you, Lids. Like, he's 122nd or 123rd of the team that Carlton is putting out there every week over the course of his career. He couldn't do any more.
Yeah. Just to look at it purely on the brutal sort of hardline football stance, I don't think it makes sense as a trade because I actually don't think the way Patrick Cripps is playing, you're actually going to get proper value for him at the moment.
No.
And so then you kind of think, well, for what it's going to do to the fabric of your footy club and everything else and tear the soul out of the place, why would you move him on for like a second round pick or whatever it turns out to be? It's not really going to help your cause at the end of the day anyway, unless you're going to get top 10, you know, top 12 pick for him. He may as well stay where he is. He's got a year to run on his contract.
But so the one looked equally that bad though if he doesn't play. because he's not in your best mix? Or can he restructure himself to become a forward who can mark it and kick goals? You know, because at the moment the midfield doesn't work with him and Chera and George Hewitt and whoever else in there.
I feel like he's got more crossover, doesn't he? Probably he's the closest thing to like a Patrick Dangerfield type that he can go forward and take a grab. And I know we said that about Nat Fyfe and it never ended up eventuating that way, but I could see that working out. He hasn't always been the most beautiful shot at goal over the years, but he can.
But
he
natural
can
forward craft. The difference is natural forward craft, and Pat's got that versus.
Correct.
I don't think Fyfe. He maybe started as a half forward flanker, but he didn't go down there enough other than just resting at full forward. And the explosiveness when you haven't got it anymore, it's very hard to get separation. So you think at 195 centimetres, Pat Cripps is getting the second tall defender. And more often than not, those guys can nullify that, you know. So I don't know, mate. It's a watch this space, but the end comes quick for some players.
Yeah, it does. Just on Carlton, I ran some numbers during the week. So Carlton in the first half, they've won 6 of their 8 first halves they've played this year, plus 65 in terms of point differential. Second half, 0-8, haven't won a second half, minus 243. Now, if you did an AFL ladder for the first half, Carlton would be 5th with a percentage of 120. If you did a second half ladder, Carlton would be 18th with a percentage of 56.
Yeah.
So that's just the enormous gulf that sits between where they've been in the first half and the second half.
They need some of Michael's secret stuff, stuff the Toon Squad had at halftime in Space Jam that was able to get them over the Monstars. Just on the Elijah, it's a sharp segue, the Elijah Hollands investigation and the what we learned during the week, Carlton bringing the game into disrepute, $75,000 fine. I'm surprised the amount of response to this has been largely from the media. Oh, this is a strong stance from the AFL, blah, blah, blah. It feels to me a little bit like, you know, the careful wording of it that everybody's responsible, but nobody's responsible. It's kind of no one's been singled out. There's a lot of legalities. The WorkSafe investigation continues, which you spoke about. I actually think that is damaging for the game in a roundabout way. I mean, if you're a parent of a young child and you're thinking about getting them into Australian rules football, we've essentially had 2 incidents on the field which are welfare incidents in the last 3 years. You know, Christian Petrarca, catastrophic internal injuries, is allowed to be put back out there on the field. We saw the same thing basically repeat in the VFL a few weeks ago with one of the Camporeale's young blokes, had the same thing at Carlton. It was actually on the same weekend in which Elijah Hollands, who was having a mental health episode, is out there on the field able to return. Essentially, Andrew Dillon was quoted as saying, yeah, absolutely a mental health episode. That's what where the inquiries have taken us. He said, based on the visual cues, the performance data, and the understanding of his circumstances, he should have been removed from the ground earlier. I get that it's there's a lot of private nature and individual health circumstances that come into this, but I just think the game has an obligation to explain to parents of prospective kids that want to play the sport how and why this was able to happen, why it's not going to happen again going into the future, to give them some kind of reassurance that, hey, if your son or your daughter wants to play, you know, Australian rules football, they're going to be looked after at the highest levels. And I feel like now we've had 2 episodes in the space of 3 years that I'm not sure we got a satisfactory answer on that.
Oh, I feel like the money to pay for the psychologist should sit outside of the soft cap. I'm a big believer in that. I also think the psychologist should be there on game day. And I said this at the time with Carlton, that even from a performance point of view, for a team that keeps losing the same way in second half capitulations, how they didn't have a sports psych on the bench, it baffles me. So that's before we even get to the seriousness of the personal aspect of it.
And then they got to go play Brisbane tonight, who they haven't played up there since the 2024 elimination finals. Tomorrow night. Friday night footy. Sorry, the first of 2 games. The other one, by the way, sees Zach Butters up against the Western Bulldogs, his boyhood club, and of course the obvious link there about the fact that he's a free agent at season's end. But our question centres around the other superstar that is involved in the game as the Power take on the Dogs. Should the Bulldogs give Marcus Bontempelli a rest? What do you reckon, Lids?
He looks a bit banged up, doesn't he? But he's like, he's trying to keep this season alive is how it looks from my point of view. You can't ask for much more from the Bont, can you? Like, I remember thinking this last year, I was just reflecting on it after I heard Bevo's press conference yesterday, is when he had that calf injury and it kept him out for 6 weeks last year, I was like, oh God, I hope this isn't like, because I went through some calf stuff. I was like, I hope this isn't the end where you just consistently keep getting them. But he got back. Another All-Australian, 2nd in the best and fairest, arguably, well, definitely would have won it had he played one of those first 6 games. But he's just a remarkable player, isn't he? But they're ill afford to with all their other injuries. They can't rest him. So it's like, I get it that you want, like, and Bevo is saying all the same things and he wants to play. It's like, I think Bevo would be saying, mate, you can't rest. There's not a chance. If we're any chance of winning this game, which I still don't think they will win, but if they are any chance, Bond has to play.
Yeah. What about his 33-2 on one leg last week? Like, that was incredible from Marcus Bontempelli. Corb, do you feel like Zach Butters is auditioning for his new club in this game?
I don't think he needs to audition as such for any club in the competition. I think everyone will welcome him with open arms. But I think if you put your finger in the wind, it feels like the likely landing spot for him, at least the way it's been reported from the people in the know.
Not any no callbacks here for Zach Butters. He's just like, nah, mate, you got the role. You're in.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just on Bont too, I find it interesting that the conversation about him being rested comes up now. If I was a Western Bulldogs fan, I'd be thinking, gee, we're 4-4. The team was 4-2 and all these injuries arose. Thought if ever there was a time to rest Bont, it was the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They played a red-hot Sydney Swans, albeit it was the night of the reunion, so maybe that was a motivating factor for Bont to play. Then they played Fremantle, who were also red-hot, and ultimately that they got a bit closer than we all thought they would. But if you look at this four-week stretch, they now play Port Adelaide and Carlton in back-to-back weeks. I'm not sure even with the run-up and everything else, they would have beaten Sydney or Fremantle anyway, which ultimately they didn't. Should have been resting Bont then to make sure you're ready to go for Port Adelaide, because even without a number of key pieces, they're right in this game on Friday night, the same way they'll be against the Blues the following week. You win those two games, you get to 6-4, and all of a sudden, you're right back in the season.
Yeah, those were the swing games. So not playing the reunion should have been the motivating factor. Go up and see all of your former teammates and have a couple of drinks.
Lubricate that injury. I think the problem is with these sort of injuries sometimes is that rest doesn't always, it's not the, like, 1 week versus you stay in that consistent role and you're just like, well, I've just learned to deal with it now and it's a management issue for the rest of the year. So I can imagine that's probably where it sits.
Maybe he's going with the Corbin Middlemass approach, which is whatever running injury you have, just run through it, which I don't think the physios actually advise. North Melbourne and Sydney Lids.
Yes.
Have we seen anything more than brief flashes from the Kangaroos?
We've seen an improvement, I think, but you're right. I feel like against the best sides, they still lack, don't they? And that it's probably more inner belief than anything else that they're actually good enough, but I think they consistently get let down by, I think their key backs is something, a hole that they need to fill and something that they can potentially demand more of. And then defensively from their mids, when teams get a run on, how do they put a stop to that other than just trying to go even faster and harder the other way, But they're a red hot chance again. I don't know if the Swans are they're humming, but I think Charlie Curnow might be out this week with an abdominal issue. So yeah, interesting to see whether Amati can fire, because he has been going really well with Charlie Curnow in that side. Can he stand up and get a hold of that said issue that the key backs of North?
Roos wins for the season. They beat Port in round one. Then they've had wins over Essendon, Carlton and Richmond.
And so the loss to West Coast might be the one that absolutely haunts them come the back end of the year. I did some numbers around Sydney during the week as well. So this is their highest ever percentage after 8 games to start a season. Their highest since 1909 when they were South Melbourne. So it's been a minute. 164.5 was their percentage in 1909. They're 1% better than that through their first 8 games this year. So
how'd they go in 1909, Benny?
They won the flag, Lids. You'll be there pleased to know. Mate. Yep. So maybe that's a good omen for the Sydney Swans.
GWS and Essendon. So this game's on Saturday night. What about Nate Caddy's comments on Melbourne radio during the week, expressing that he's sick of mediocrity? Is that good or bad for Essendon, do you think, that he voices it in that kind of fashion? Brad Scott certainly took a positive spin on it all, but how did you read what Nate had to say?
I like a young bloke who, and you can honestly see the way he prepares, the way his effort is, he doesn't waver, he's unconditional in that sense. Like, he continues to try and work hard. And I think that's what the line that Brad Scott was probably going down as well. He's like, well, this kid, he's bought in. Let's try and get some others to come along. The only issue I've got is make sure your own backyard's tidy. Now, mate, you've missed a lot of goals over the last couple of weeks. Tidy those up, mate, because that might get us a bit closer when we're doing all this hard work and you're not capping it off. That would be my only issue. But as a whole, mate, I love that kid and the way he goes about his footy. I think he's going to be a young up and coming superstar of the competition.
How do you feel about it, Corb? You're the Essendon fan.
Always nervous because you think there's what reason has Essendon given anyone to stick around and stay for a period of time. So I like what Brad Scott's saying, which is basically like, oh, he's all bought in, he's invested, he wants his team to be great, he wants to do it here. Well, as long as he feels like that's achievable there, otherwise, if he does feel like that and he feels like there's no hope, he might just pack up and go and do it somewhere else.
Well, there was a story during the week linking him to Collingwood, so who knows, we'll watch that. What did you make of the news during the week from the chair of the GWS Giants, Lids, Tim Reid, suggesting they could consider a name change and get rid of the GWS, just be the Giants, much like North Melbourne did in the early 2000s. How would you feel about that?
I got asked about this yesterday from one of your cohorts there at the ABC, and it was news to me yesterday. I had no idea. And then there was another suggestion about potentially going to Canberra, and I said, well, good luck attracting talent to Canberra and therefore maintaining talent, in my opinion. Nothing wrong with Canberra, but it's a cold.
It's cold, yeah.
How do I feel about it? Oh, they've just always been the GWS Giants to me. And if you just go to just the Giants, I mean, you've got to have a Sydney or something to it, don't you?
Yeah, like, I think so.
And I don't reckon the Swans would want that.
Eddie suggested the New South Wales Giants.
Yeah.
Not sure that works either.
I don't like that either. And it's the same with the fact we got Tasmania coming into the competition. I don't like how in the one competition you have cities as well as, and in Victoria's case, suburbs, and then also states. Like, it's either we're cities or we're states. We're not both. Like, state of origin is meant to be, you know, Victoria versus WA versus Tasmania versus New South Wales.
Where do we
have
the states? Like West Coast?
Tasmania.
Oh, Tasmania, yeah. Sure.
So, but if you had New South Wales, that would be another state.
Well, yeah, whatever. They, it turns Hobart. They should be the Hobart Devils. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yep. Or pick us.
So, how does Launceston feel about that? Oh yeah. God, you've opened up a can of worms.
I don't know if you've seen their VFL crowds. I don't know if Launceston know that they're in the competition yet. They've been going in Tassie. They haven't been going in Launceston. So,
been going in Hobart, not in Launceston.
Yeah. What did I say?
They've been going in Tassie, not in Launceston.
So
Gorman doesn't think Launceston's part of Tasmania.
I'm trying to get up.
What you're putting down, mate. Just, I don't need to pick you up on it.
The other thing, the best thing about the Giants, by the way, is their song. They're going to have to change that. There's a Weather Greater Western Sydney Giants. They're going to have to find another.
Western Sydney? Could they just be Western Sydney Giants or not?
They're going to have to hold that syllable. Mm. We're the Western Sydney Giants.
I think their issue is that people don't identify it as Western Sydney.
So no one calls it GWS. Yeah.
No. Anyway, Gold Coast and St Kilda. You remember Ross Lyon's famous the AFL's Nepo Babies comments. They've been feuding over the academies and everything else. Is this a real rivalry game in the AFL now, Lids?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a bit of byplay more than anything else between two stubborn head coaches who don't mind voicing their opinions. And as for the players, I can't see how they'll buy into it too much other than a bit of a rev up pre-game. And it being an important game for both sides to get a win in their column. I can't see how this is a rivalry.
No. It's a great home ground advantage up in the top end for Gold Coast as well. Yes. So I won their last eight up there. It gets very dewy and slippery. They train in very humid conditions a lot in southeast Queensland, so it suits them down to the ground, pun intended. Very good conditions for them.
How did you and what was your take on the Sunday night footy up on the Gold Coast as a whole?
I like Sunday night footy as a slot that I don't think we utilise. I'm not sure the Gold Coast is the landing spot for it.
Yeah. I thought it was putrid.
Yeah. Anyway. It was good in prospects, and then when you turn it on, you're sitting there watching it, you think,
mate, fumbles and errors. Yeah. It's like, oh, God, this is not... Anyway.
How about St Kilda, by the way? They entered the VFL in its inception back in 1897. First time they've played at Morara in Darwin. Wow. So a little new venue for the Saints on Saturday night. At the same time, Geelong play Collingwood. Scott Pendlebury equals the game's record, plays game number 432. But a little hat tip from us here on ABC AFL Daily for another man who celebrates a milestone, 200th game for Tom Stewart, who's a five-time All-Australian, didn't play a single game, wasn't even on an AFL list until he was 23. So the question is, Lids, where does Tom Stewart rank among the best mature-age pickups that we've seen in the competition?
Well, tell me his class that he's up against, and I'll give you...
I went through it, Lids. I can't really find anyone. I mean, James Podsiadly, no. John Newcombe, no.
Michael Barlow.
Yeah, Marlon Pickett. Mickey B. We like Mickey B. Marlon Pickett, Tim Kelly, Brody Mychek, Sam Durham plays his 100th this weekend. I don't think there's been one better. He's a five-time All-Australian. Are we calling him a halfback flank, like an intercepting defender? I don't think there's been any of those mature-age guys, Lids, tell me if I'm wrong, who have been maybe the best player in the comp at their role.
Yeah. No, mate, you're spot on. And to be five-time All-Australian, like, granted, it helps when you go into a pretty damn good system. Like, that does help. And you're playing with some other good players around you, you know, in that defensive area, but also in the midfield. But what he's been able to do and the consistency, you know, in terms of mature ages, I love what, you know, the Cats and Wellesley down there, mate. He's forever lauded, isn't he, for his ability to find him and to back him in. But I think it also speaks to the development of, you know, Nige Lappin and his team under him as to how they develop these boys and get them ready to play senior footy and not just, you know, we've probably seen a number of mature ages come through or even younger players and not be able to make it who might have had the same ability, but weren't developed in the same sense.
I think a lot of clubs would love to have Nigel Appen become a senior coach or be a line coach at their club, but he just loves developing young players and is seemingly, I mean, there's so much that goes into the melting pot, but seemingly the best at it in the competition.
We don't talk enough about All-Australian jumpers either, so to have won five of those in your position is just a phenomenal achievement. So well done to Tom Stewart. First game between the clubs since Jack Crisp had that shot after the siren last year, so they have a happy knack of playing close games against one another, the Cats and the Pies. To Sunday footy, there's only two games on. Naturally, they're both in Melbourne and they pretty much overlap at the same time on Mother's Day. Melbourne play the West Coast Eagles. Should Andrew McWalter and his side be under more pressure, Lids, than they are at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I think largely, like, Minnie's, he's taken over the reins when that side needed to be fully flipped on its head, very similar to what the Richmond side needed to go through. So, you know, he still had some contracted players there that he would have liked to have no doubt maybe moved on and been able to regenerate a little bit quicker. But no, I think you're still seeing a young team with some older players, some old dogs trying to learn new tricks, but younger players still trying to learn the system and how it works. So it's just going to take time, mate, and you've got to get games into those guys.
Do you reckon he's trying to get their head out of the books and everything else after Daniel Chick's comments that nerds can't win flags?
What did Chicky say?
He said nerds can't win flags, and on a LinkedIn post, which was not the landing spot I thought that it would have ended up. He also went on to sign off his post by saying, Chicky, Chicky, bang, bang.
I love Chicky.
I reckon Chicky Chicky Bang Bang might have had a couple too many at the reunion and therefore thought, you know, where am I going to post this? I haven't got Facebook anymore. There's no MySpace, so I'm going to go LinkedIn. That's a perfect spot for it. Come on, Chicky. So you need blokes to be out there on the source until 5 a.m, do you, and then having a great time to win flags, do you? That's a real... I think footy's moved on from there, Daniel. You might just want to check back into reality.
And just a little quick one. I noticed this. I did the Sydney game, as Ben did last Sunday, because I pick up when to lay that tackle on Chad Warner, and he's started to get a set of these now. I saw it picked up on one of the talk shows during the week. So does he need to change his tackling technique? Because he'd mainly to protect himself as much as anything. He's almost like he's leading. He gets so low and he leads with his head in his tackling technique. Is that correctable?
Potentially, but he keeps coming off. He doesn't come off second best too often, mate, does he? So I don't think there's any issues there. He just knows, and very similar to probably rugby players in how they tackle, that, you know, get in and get your head in there to the side. Yeah. But you see some guys tackling cactuses, mate, and they're too afraid to get their chest on them and get their head in there. So
I think he's just failing a little bit with getting the cheek to the shoulder, which he could a little more just to protect that head. Not that I'm any great tackling expert. I didn't lay many. This will surprise both of you. I didn't lay many in my time, but that is what they say in rugby union. Richmond and the Adelaide Crows. Do you still believe, Lids, that the Crows can contend this season? So 11th, 4-4, 96.6% percentage. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying can they make finals. I'm saying can they meaningfully contend?
No, I don't think they can, unfortunately. I feel like last year they shot the lights out, and their ability, like, finished on top of the ladder, obviously didn't have a great finish to the year, But sometimes that expectation is, we'll train a bit harder, we'll get a bit better, and away we go, and it'll be linear, and we'll continue to trend upwards. Sometimes you need that downward spiral, downward year. And I only use the example of Richmond when I was there in terms of 2015, finish to fifth, should have finished fourth comfortably, expect to win, lose first week of finals, no worries, 16 will be great. The RSN falls out of the place and you miss finals altogether. But then the next year that they bounce back, so maybe it's that, and they can add some quality to their list as well. I still think they lack some genuine star power in that side. And they just need to be able to find a way to get more out of their forwards if it's not Tex. I think, for all of Phil Thorpe's beauty and what I'd love to just see more consistency from him, and Fogarty the same. But, I mean, they had the sky was the limit for them, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. They were on top of the ladder. They're always, it's a big ask to get back there. But at this point in time, it doesn't look good.
Fremantle Hawthorne tonight. Who wins, Leeds? Off the step?
I've got the Dockers just. Dockers, yeah. I think it'll be a tight one again.
I'm Freo as well. Ben?
I'm Hawthorne. I think Hawthorne win a close one.
Okay. Dockers been up for a while now. They won, seven on the trot. Superdog selection time. So the leaderboard, movement down the bottom. So I picked up 5 points for a little cover on the back of the Demons, getting within 31.5 of the Swans. Brett DeLidio got a little cover play on Port Adelaide, very nearly won outright. So you got 5 points there for the Power with a 12.5-point head start in the showdown. And Ben, you had the Giants, 18.5 points. They lost by 20, so points for you. Ben's out in front on 62, Lids on 20, and myself on 10.
I'll go first.
No, you've been picking first every week. You can't just pick first.
You're in front, mate. You go last, unfortunately.
Lids will go first, so I'll go second. So the Port Adelaide Bulldogs game's ineligible, so we're not doing that one. Yeah. The other games are all fair play. We also can't do Fremantle Hawthorn tonight. Here's the options from the seven options available. Carlton, you get 42.5 as a head start against Brisbane. North Melbourne with 27.5-point head start against Sydney. Essendon are catching 45.5 points against the Giants. St Kilda with 17.5 points against the Gold Coast up in Darwin. Collingwood with 13.5 points as a head start against Geelong. West Coast with 42.5 against Melbourne. And Richmond with 36.5 points against the Crows.
Well, the bottom two are out. The Pies, a chance, just because they defend so well. And if that game, Gold Coast Saints, was at Marvel or even on the Gold Coast, I'm going to go with the Saints. I think they can get within 17.5 against the Suns.
Pies for me.
I was going to take the Pies.
Bad luck. You've got to choose something else now.
I don't like anything else.
Oh, well.
That's how it works when you're top of the tree.
This is called equalization.
Yes. This is Superdog's equalization. I will take, North Melbourne. I hate it, but
Kangas,
the only option I've got.
No, Charlie, they're a chance.
27.5 points.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
There we go. And we're into round 9 and we haven't doubled up on any of the Superdog games so far. Leeds, enjoy your weekend of footy. I will chat to you soon here on ABC AFL Daily.
Look forward to it, boys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Ben. Good calling.
Thanks, Corb. Thanks, Leeds.
You're home of the footy conversation, 5 episodes a week right here on ABC AFL Daily.